Now, with that being said, I believe joining us right now on the phone line is none other than your state treasurer, Joe, none other than Mr. Steve Grossman. Mr. Grossman, are you there?
I am right here. You guys are the center of the universe today.
Do you think so?
Well, at least the political universe, and you would not want to be in the center of the universe, the center in the ring down in Washington right now, would you?
No, I would not.
Not at all.
I'm feeling safe up here in Massachusetts for some reason.
We actually get things done here.
I have to ask you, I mean, is it affecting our state at all as far as financially with what's going on down in Washington with the government shutdown?
Not yet. Obviously, federal employees and federal programs are affected. I oversee the Commonwealth's cash, our financial resources. We were fortunate enough to do an annual borrowing for short-term cash flow in the fall, September, and we pay it back in the spring. We were able to borrow $800 million just a couple weeks ago at a very low interest rate. In fact, the lowest interest rate we've ever gotten. We don't know another state that's ever been able to borrow $800 million at 0.05%.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Well, and I would think with that kind of borrowing power, you're able to save a little bit of money for me, Joe, Pat, taxpayer, right?
Well, we save actually in the budget, the fiscal 14 budget that we're in the middle of right now, we were actually able to save $6.7 million alone in reducing the outlay of taxpayers' money by being able to borrow at that rate. So, you know, Massachusetts, we got some problems, we got challenges, there's no doubt, but we are still seen by investors, which is the only thing that matters, how the investors look at us, as a place they want to invest. They know we've got pension liabilities, they know we've got other challenges, but they see Massachusetts as a place that has great prospects for the future, that's put aside $1.6 billion in the Rainy Day Fund, which is the third largest in the country, and they like that. So they reward us with very low interest rates, and that's good for us because over the 3 years I think I've been treasurer, we've sold enough bonds so that we'll save hundreds of millions of dollars over the next 25 or 30 years, partly because of interest rates going down, partly because we have the highest bond rating we've ever had.
Well, I have to ask you, I know that it was, you know, last time we had talked with you, you were on the cusp of announcing that you were going to take a run for governor next year. Does a part of you say, you know, I've done such a good job. My office has done such a good job with the taxpayers' money as far as with, you know, when it comes to retirement, the lottery has had record sales. Does a part of you say maybe I should run for, did ever a part of you say maybe I should go for one more term as treasurer? Or is it you've done your job, you've kind of maybe set up the next person who comes in office to continue on your trend?
Well, let me tell you why I'm running for governor. And you're right, the job of treasurer is very challenging, very exciting. I made a number of promises to the people of the Commonwealth, to the people of the South Shore when I ran. I said, number one, we're going to put the state's checkbook online because taxpayers pay over $20 billion a year in taxes, and they're entitled to know how all that money is being spent, don't you think?
I think
it's their money.
Right.
And that's what transparency is all about. Transparency can't just be a word. It's got to be real life that we actually play it out. If people want to see the checkbook online, they can go to mass.gov/open checkbook, and they can take a look right down at checkbook level detail. We came into office, and we said we would put everything out to bid, all our financial services, legal services. We spend a lot of money every year at Treasury, and we've saved tens of millions of dollars, and that's money that can be used for other purposes. Some people say, well, what could you use it for? I said, well, that's not up to me, but frankly, if you gave me one priority and said, let's take some of the savings and spend it, I would take the 30,000 kids who are on the waiting list for pre-K education and try to remove them off that waiting list and put them in a pre-K program, because we all know that if kids aren't reading fluently by the time they're finished with the third grade, they may fall behind and never catch up. And that's not okay to do that to kids who have a bright future, and we've got an obligation. So, you know, the job of treasurer has also been about the lottery, and you know, the lottery has had two back-to-back record years, and that's important because every one of the cities and towns on the South Shore got an increase in local aid partly as a result of those higher profits. And that's money for firefighters and police officers and paving the streets in front of your house and senior centers and all the things that people care about. So we've had a 3 years in which we've delivered on the promises. The governor's got a really big toolbox. He's got a lot of power tools in that toolbox, particularly on the two issues that I care about and that I have the most experience in, the most important of which is jobs, education, economic future. Having spent 35 years running a business successfully and bringing that experience into treasurer's office and having used it to create small business banking partnership loans to small businesses, the governor's office, I think, would give me an opportunity to use those skills and that experience in terms of maximizing the economic opportunity for everyone and leaving no one behind.
Now, while you're still wearing your treasurer's hat at this particular moment, I know there's one thing that you've actually been kind of pushing the lawmakers up on Beacon Hill to do, and that is to enact some sick time bills for some of our folks here in the Commonwealth.
Yeah, it's called earned sick time. We didn't call it that in our company. We call it paid family leave, but whether you call it paid family leave or earned sick time, it's been 25 years since our family business that I ran for 35 years brought in sick time for its employees. And, you know, almost a million people woke up this morning without a single hour of earned sick time. That means they're sick, they get the flu, they go to work, in many cases sick, because they're afraid of losing their jobs. If their kids are sick, 101 temperature with the flu, they send their kids to school sick because they worry about getting a pink slip. And that's not okay. Some people say, how can you afford that? I say, how can you afford not to do it? I mean, people in our company have been more productive, more effective, more loyal, more flexible. They've been great workers, and I think great companies are made up of workers who have sufficient benefits to be able to live a life that's high quality. And so I'm in favor of this. Some people disagree with me. You remember that mayor of New York who died fairly recently, Ed Koch?
Yes, sir.
Remember Ed Koch? So Ed Koch once said, you know, if you agree with me on 8 out of 12 issues, vote for me. If you agree with me on 12 out of 12 issues, see a psychiatrist. So some people will disagree with this. Some people won't think that they can afford it. It's a modest amount of time. It exempts the really small businesses from having to pay for it. It does require a certain number of hours a year, a certain number of hours of time that people can take off for illness or for their parents' illness. Assume your mom breaks her hip and you have to take her to a series of doctors for rehab, and you're the only caregiver within 20 miles of your mom's home. I think it's okay to provide, you know, 5 days for small businesses of paid or earned sick time so that you can take care of your mom that way, because I wouldn't want to have to say to my mom, Mom, I'm sorry, but I'm worried about losing my job, so you're going to have to just fend for yourself. Nobody would want to do that to their mom.
Any idea where this stands? Is either one of these bills stand at this particular time? Are they in committee?
I testified on behalf of the earned sick time a couple of weeks ago. The legislature could pass it in this session. Many people don't think they'll pass it, which is why signatures are being gathered for a ballot question. In order to get on the ballot, you've got to collect probably 200,000 signatures by November 20th.
Right.
And then get them validated by December 5th. And that's a tough proposition, but I see a lot of activity all over the state in gathering these signatures. I think it's an idea whose time has come. I was very proud of the fact that way back in 2006, I was the first business owner to testify on behalf of paid family leave. Now we're in sick time. That's 7 years ago, almost 8 years ago. I think this is an idea whose time has come. Again, we have it in our business. My two boys still run the business now, and other companies have it. For those who don't have it, I think it's the right thing to do.
Okay. We are speaking with State Treasurer Steve Grossman, and he's with us for a couple of more minutes. You are listening to 95.9 WATD. I have to ask you in regards to announcing that you're going to run for governor. it appears, at least to go for the Democratic nod, you're going to have somebody else who is an elected official here in Massachusetts, and Martha Coakley, who is also seeking it. Give me your thoughts in this race that's shaping up, at least for the moment.
Of course, I don't know what other people are going to emphasize in their case that they're going to make to the people of Massachusetts. What I will emphasize is that I spent 35 years running a successful business, growing it eightfold, brought that experience into the treasurer's office, found out that our money, our deposits, were sitting in Europe, Australia, and Asia, brought that money back to local banks all over the state, banks like the South Shore Savings Bank and Rockland Trust. They've taken that money and made thousands of loans worth hundreds of millions of dollars, particularly focusing on women-owned and minority-owned and immigrant-owned businesses and businesses owned by veterans. We don't claim credit for every one of those loans, but it certainly has been a catalyst. So if jobs, economic growth, economic opportunity, bringing, as my one of the goals I've set for this next 4 years when I'm governor, is to create 50,000 new manufacturing jobs, people say, how are you going to do that? Well, the answer is that if you bring the business community and our vocational technical schools together with our community colleges, and you put together a coherent plan, manufacturing is coming back from China, more and more of it, because people realize that manufacturing in Massachusetts can be cost-effective. We make better products. It's in our bones. It's in our DNA. There's no one of the gateway communities in this state, including the city of Brockton and others in the state, that where manufacturing was not a key part of our economy. We've got to dramatically enhance, I think, what some people call extended learning time, putting kids in school a longer school day so they get remedial help and so they get instruction in art and music and dance and sports. I mean, kids in extended learning time in school do better, test better, are happier, healthier, I believe, and are more productive. And finally, we've got to get those 30,000 kids off that waiting list for universal pre-K. So I'm going to focus on jobs, the economy, our economic future, linked up to education, because we got to prepare those young people. And I want to make sure that the 18 to 35-year-olds, that's the backbone, that's the future. Mm. If we lose too many of them to other places around the country because we don't deal with transportation and housing and student debt and jobs and internships. And so I'm working through what I call our Young Professionals Advisory Council to actually listen carefully to the young professionals, to the 18 to 35-year-olds, and I'm going to be guided by their sense of urgency about how to solve common sense problems that affect their lives and that drive them away. We need them here. We can't lose a single one of them. We can't spare them. They're the future of this Commonwealth, and they're the future backbone of the workforce in a 21st century innovation economy.
Of course, we are speaking with State Treasurer Steve Grossman, also a candidate for governor in 2014. Joe is going to have the last question that he's going to pose to you before we let you go. Treasurer, go ahead, Joe.
Treasurer, you know, it's I know you announced a little while ago that you're running for governor. Do you have any big statewide tours or campaign kickoffs or anything coming up within the next few months that we should be looking forward to?
You know, I don't know that you're going to see a statewide tour in that fashion, but I'm spending a lot of time in every corner of the Commonwealth, number one, doing my principal job, which is the job of state treasurer. I think you know I chair the Mass School Building Authority.
Right. Mm.
And as chairman of the Mass School Building Authority, we're spending $1 billion a year building new schools, renovating schools, there's new windows, whether it's in Hingham or other Hanover, where we've finish the project. Other places, we're just beginning. So we're spending a lot of time in small businesses, manufacturing companies, research companies, trying to demonstrate that when banks, small, local, regional, community banks, are lending to creditworthy small businesses, jobs are being created. So I think you'll see me spending a lot of time working with, dealing with local business owners, educators, trying to figure out and be a good listener. My father once said to me, Steve, you were born with one mouth and two ears. Use them in that proportion. Be a better listener than talker. And frankly, when you listen to the small business owners, when you listen to educators, when you listen to young professionals, you listen to those people who have been affected by substance abuse issues, and substance abuse is a problem that we have not dealt effectively with. I don't know if you know this, but we have, in Massachusetts, we have cut our investment, our commitment to mental health, behavioral health, and substance abuse programs more than any other state in New England over the past 5 years. That is not a healthy thing. And finally, my wife is vice chair of the Mass Cultural Council. She's a theater historian. She has taught me over the years, 43 years as a teacher, that the arts are central to everything that we do to try to educate the whole child. And arts are also an economic driver. You think about why people come and live in Massachusetts, and often it's because of the cultural life of the community. They want their kids to have vibrant cultural activities. Seniors in senior centers want to have vibrant cultural activities to retain that energy and that excitement as they get older. So to me, arts are critical. We've cut our arts budget as a percentage of the state budget by over 80% in the last 25 years. I want to see us increase that. You won't see me offering an idea or a program without telling you how we're going to pay for it. I think it is not leadership when you offer an idea without telling people how it's going to be paid for. Anybody can throw out a big idea that costs $1 billion. But I think what separates out people who are credible from those who aren't is your ability to say, here's how we're going to pay for it. Here's what we can't pay for now. Here's being honest with people and direct with people and sharing with people what I think is truth-telling. People want that. They don't want evasive answers, and they don't want ideas that when you ask them how they're going to fund it, they say, well, I don't know, but come back and talk to me in a couple of years. We need to grow our way. This is the last point I'll make. We need to grow our way out of this recession, not tax our way out of this recession. Yes, I supported increasing funding for transportation by $500 million, adding up and growing to $800 million by 2018. We need to invest in transportation infrastructure. But we, I think, make a mistake when we try to put too big a tax burden on the backs of middle-class families who are struggling to get out of the recession and are nowhere near where they were 5 years ago. So it's a balancing act, but Paul Songa said it best years and years ago. He said, you cannot spend wealth or redistribute wealth that you never create. We should be celebrating the creation of wealth and opportunity, spread it widely, try to create equal opportunities for everyone who's willing to work hard and play by the rules. And those are principles that I was taught 35 years in business, and I brought to the treasurer's office. Those are progressive values, in my view, that almost any working family could support. And I hope that as this campaign moves along, I'll have an opportunity to come back on air with you and to have a good, solid conversation about some of these issues as the campaign rolls along.
Well, that's what we will do. I offered it to the guest before you to have him come on, you know, on a regular basis. And as the candidates start making their campaigns known to the Commonwealth and the voters, we'll offer the same same opportunity. You know, you are not only as the treasurer, but also as a gubernatorial candidate. We thank you for coming on tonight, and we definitely will have you on probably in the next, I'd say, 5 or 6 weeks to at least touch base and find out what's new.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much. Look forward to being back with you and appreciate this opportunity to be with you this afternoon, this early evening.
Fantastic. There he is, State Treasurer Steve Grossman. We will step aside for a few moments. When we come back, we're going to speak with State Representative Keiko Oral. Don't go anywhere.